from the existing order of the 5th chapter, text 15 of Srimad Bhagavatam.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Putrams cha shishyams cha ripo gurur va mal loka kamo mad anugrahartaha itam vibanyur anushishyad Ataj yan na yojayet karmasu karma mudan kang yojayan manujo artam labeta nipatayan nashta drishang hi Garte Putram Shishisham Chan Ripo Gururva Maloka Kamo Madanugrahartaha Itam Vimanyur Anushishadat Atas Jagan Anushishadataj gyan na yojayat karma su karma mudan kam yojayan manujo hartam la kam yojayan manujo hartam la beta nipatayan nashta trisham higarte Putram shishisham chan ripo gururva Maloka kamo madanugrahartaha Itam vibanyur anushishadataj yan Anayojiyat karma su karma mudan Kam yojayan manujartam labeta Nipatayan nashta drisham higarte Puchams jasishams chan ripo gururva Maloka kamo madanugrahartaha Itam vimanyur anushishadachas atas gyan Ayojiyat karma su karma mudan Kam yojiyan manu jo artam lap Kam yojiyan manu artam Kam yojiyan manu jartam labeta Patayan nashta drisham higarte.
Thank you.
Putran, the sons. Cha, Shishan, the disciples. Cha, and Ripaha, the king. Guru, the spiritual master. Va, or Matloka Kamaha, desiring to go to my abode. Mat anugraha artaha, thinking that to achieve my mercy is the aim of life. Itam, in this manner. Vimanyuhu, free from anger. Anushishat, should instruct. Atatyan, bereft of spiritual knowledge. Na, not. Yojayet, should engage. Karmasu, in fruitive activities. Karmamudan,
simply engaged in pious or impious activities.
Kam, what? Yojayan,
engaging.
Manujaha,
amen.
Artam,
benefit.
Lobeta, can achieve. Nipatayan,
causing to fall.
Nashtadrisham, one who is already bereft of his transcendental sight.
He,
indeed. Garte,
in the hole.
Translation, if one is serious about going back home, back to Godhead, he must consider the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the summum bonum, and chief aim of life. If he is a father instructing his sons, a spiritual master instructing his disciples, or a king instructing his citizens, he must instruct them as I have advised. Without being angry, he should continue giving instructions, even if his disciple, son, or citizen is sometimes unable to follow his order. Ignorant persons who engage in pious and impious activities should be engaged in devotional service by all means. They should always avoid fruitive activity. If one puts into the bondage of karmic activity his disciple, son, or citizen, who is bereft of transcendental vision, how will one profit? It is like leading a blind man to a dark well and causing him to fall in. So you can repeat. If one is serious about going back home, back to Godhead, he must consider the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
The summum bonum and chief aim of life.
If he is a father instructing his sons, a spiritual master instructing his disciples, or a king instructing his citizens, he must instruct them as I have advised.
Without being angry,
he should continue giving instructions.
Even if his disciple, son, or citizen
is sometimes unable to follow his order.
Ignorant people who engage in pious and impious activities
should be engaged in devotional service.
By all means.
They should always avoid furtive activity.
If one puts into the bondage of karmic activity his disciple,
son or citizen,
who is bereft of transcendental vision,
how will one profit?
It is like leading a blind man
to a dark well and causing him to fall in.
So, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
It is stated in Bhagavad Gita in the third chapter, text 26.
Na buddhi vedam janayet agyanam karma sanginam josayet sarva karmani vidvan yukta samat charan.
Let not the wise disrupt the minds of the ignorant, who are attached to fruitive action. They should be encouraged not to refrain from work, but to work in the spirit of devotion.
So, Ahucham sashisham chanripo gururva maloka kamo maranugrahartaha vitam vimanyuranu shishyadataj gyan tayoji at karma sukarma mutan kam yojian manujartam labeta Ipatyanashta drisham higarte.
So, Om Ganat, Timidandasha, Gananjana, Shlakaya, Chakshur, and Meditam, Yena Tasmai, Shi, Gurave, Namaha. So, here you actually see the fine line or the razor's edge that a preacher has to follow. Preacher or spiritual master, or father or mother, because Lord Vrishabhadev also says no one should become father, mother, worshipful personality, or guru, unless he is capable of liberating his dependent from the cycle of birth and death. So it's actually a fine line, because on one hand, if you get too heavy and strict, then you discourage the person. On the other hand, if you get too loose, then you're misleading the person. This is actually what's pointed out here, because this, first of all, it says the spiritual master, etc., should not become angry even if his disciple, son, or citizen is sometimes unable to follow his order. But then it says they should also always avoid fruitive activity. You know, we should encourage people to always avoid fruitive activity. So it's really a razor's edge when you're preaching Krishna consciousness. And there's many examples of how great devotees actually follow these particular principles by just understanding how to engage someone in Krishna consciousness without discouraging them, or without heaving them out, or without preaching some bogus philosophy. I mean, one example that comes to mind is the example of Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj certainly had a fruitive desire. In fact, it was an intense, practically unlimited fruit of desire. He desired to have a kingdom greater than that of Lord Brahma. I mean, that's pretty fruitive. I mean, if you think of my desires, I just simply want another computer. But he wanted something like to control something bigger than the universe. And so he left home looking for Lord Vishnu in the forest, as his mother advised. Because he asked, you know, where's Lord Vishnu? Because he was encouraged by Suruchi that you should worship Lord Vishnu if you want to take birth in my womb. And then he asked his mother, where's Lord Vishnu? And his mother said, I have heard Lord Vishnu was in the forest. So therefore, in the middle of the night, while he was lying, he was only like 5 years old, he was lying in the bed next to his mother. He just left in the middle of the night. And his poor mother woke up that morning, and she discovered her son was gone. And she, can you imagine that?
And she figured out that he had gone to the forest. So anyway, so he went to the forest and he was looking for Vishnu, and along comes Narada Muni, his spiritual master. And Narada Muni says, you know, later on in life, you can do whatever, you know, you can engage in austerities. But now is the time for, you know, like Varnashram system. Varnashram system has a time in life for everything. In the beginning of life, there's the student life, the brahmachari life. After that, there's grahastha life. After that, there's vanaprastha life. And after that, there's sannyas life. But Dhruva Maharaj actually did almost the opposite. I mean, he became almost like a sannyasi when he was 5, and then later on got married. But anyway, so Narada Muni, he said, go back home, little boy. I mean, that was responsible, obviously. I mean, if you're a guru or a sage and you see a little boy wandering in the forest, you're not going to say, hey, this is great, engage in austerities. We actually see that there was this misunderstanding in ISKCON that not only did the some of the leaders or sannyasis or people say, it's great, you should engage in austerities, they sort of forced the little kids to engage in austerities. I remember in the early days, they would have the kids get 6 hours or less of sleep at night and take cold showers in the morning. There was one devotee who, once he got married, he actually turned off the hot water and forced his whole family to take cold showers, and even his daughter to take cold showers. Anyway, that's another story. So there was this imposition, what's called an artificial imposition of austerity. Actually, Prabhupada said austerity can be presented to the children, but it should be like a game. Like when I was young, we went to summer camp, and it was like a game. You know, you camp out. It was fun. I mean, in a material sense. Not that I'm advocating it for anybody to go to summer camp. But anyway, it was fun because it was austere. We slept in a tent at night, and it was sometimes cold. It was sleeping bags. And we lived in an ashram. Not exactly an ashram. Wouldn't call it an ashram. But, you know, with a bunch of other people with bunk beds. We had a lot of fun in the summer. And then I had to go back to school, which was not fun. So, it was done in such a way that it was actually fun. Because you had all sorts of games, you had something to look forward to in the day. It wasn't just simply austerity. So Prabhupada said if the children are going to be encouraged in austerity, it has to be made to be fun. You understand? Fun. Like a game. So unfortunately, many Prabhupada's followers didn't understand that. And even today, there's this artificial imposition of austerity. This one school where they force the kids to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, and it's, you know, it's not fun. I mean, for me it's fun because I get up and I chant, I like to do it, but I'm not a kid. And I've already adjusted my mind to this, and it's, you know, I like to do that. I'm choosing to do that. Nobody's forcing me to do that. Nobody's forcing me. I mean, sometimes, even with adults, there's this sort of force to do certain austerities, and you're made to feel guilty if you don't do those austerities. I remember when devotees started staying up all night on Ekadasi, and not eating on the Kadasi. And it, you know, I was made to feel guilty by some people. You know, why don't you do this? And, you know, I was thinking if I do that, then I'll just be exhausted for the next 2 or 3 days, have a headache, it'll impede my health, impede my service. And so I didn't do it, but I felt real guilty because people were just like, it was like that. You know, why don't you do this? This is what you're supposed to do. You hear this all the time, you're supposed to do. So, you know, I found it rather discouraging in devotional service to sort of have this guilt trip or feel that I had to do something. When Prabhupada actually didn't do that, Prabhupada didn't stay up all night on the Kadasi. Prabhupada didn't fast completely on Ekadasi. You know, Prabhupada had his devotees prepare special preparations on Ekadasi. I'm not saying that that's what we should do, but Prabhupada, you know, understood. You know, Prabhupada, even one time, the devotees were trying to impose on Prabhupada more or less the diet that I follow. You know, a raw diet of boiled food. And Prabhupada even said, let the starvation committee go to hell. You know, in the name of health, they were trying to impose something on Prabhupada, not a voluntary thing. So that's really the point. I mean, voluntary austerity is one thing, like when one just becomes so ecstatic, like the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, that they neglect, they forget to eat or forget to sleep. I mean, that's one thing, but when you have to stay up all night by pinching yourself or just like, I remember even there were some sannyasis, and many of those sannyasis had trouble. I mean, you know, I'm not going to mention any names. They would just like always have to stand up, and as soon as they sat down, they would fall asleep. You know, I just remember seeing all this artificial austerity in our society in the beginning days. I mean, now it's not present so much anymore. Things have sort of like reached or come to the level that people can maintain. So that's the point. When you push someone, either through guilt or just imposing them, you have to do that, social pressure, then what happens is you create a traumatic experience for someone. And even if they do that temporarily, and you see this with so many of our young people, second generation, even if they do that temporarily, what happens is, because they've been traumatized with it, later on in life, they're actually averse to that activity. You know, I have one disciple in Serbia who his mother used to force to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning and do deity worship and everything at 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, little boy when he was 5 or 6. And now he's a nice devotee. You know, he's a disciple. And he has, you know, wonderful family, nice wife and everything like that. He's very Krishna conscious. But one thing he can't do is get up early in the morning. Because even when I mention it, he starts shaking. You know, it's like that's called PTSD, you know, suffering from it. And he's like 40 years old. You know, you don't understand how it affects someone when you force someone to do something. What is that poet? A person convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. But so really, we shouldn't be doing that, imposing people. I remember even when I joined the movement, We were forced to get less than 5 hours of sleep a night. Nobody was allowed to take a nap in the middle of the day. And people were just falling asleep all the time. You know, I was driving a car and I would take a nap when I stopped for a red light. Fortunately, I didn't take a nap in between the lights. You know, I had enough self-control, so I just took my naps at the red lights. And then I was woken up by the alarm horn of the car behind me. Beep, beep, okay. Drive to the next light. And then Bhagavatam class, you'd regularly hear people crashing to the ground. You know, people would stand up, and even standing up, they couldn't stay awake. They would just, all of a sudden you hear, in the class, you'd be speaking about Krishna, you know, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And then other devotees would have to walk around with a spray bottle for Tulsi Devi, spraying each other in the faces. I don't know if any of you remember this. I'm sure Kamalini remembers that. You know, you have to just like, you know, people, and then you pick their heads up and shh, like that. In Bhagavatam class, I mean, it's just crazy. Impose it there. And then when it's imposed, you don't continue it. It has to be voluntary. It's like anything. It's like a diet. You send people, put people on a diet, and as soon as the diet's over, then they just regain all their weight again because it's a very artificial thing. So something has to come from the heart. That's the point I'm making. So when we're guiding people and preaching people, we have to really see where they're at in terms of their ability and their desires, and we have to engage those ability and desire. So getting back to the story of Narada Muni and Dhruva Maharaj, which is where we started the whole class, that Narada Muni naturally told Dhruva Maharaj, go back home, little boy. You know, later on, you know, when you're like 70 or 80, or I guess it was a different age, so when you're like 90,000 years old, you know, because the different yugas, they live for a longer period of time. Nowadays, you know, 70 or 80, you're over the hill. There was one article recently about one man who's 96, he keeps having children. Anyway, but actually it showed the benefit of a vegetarian diet. You can remain enthusiastic up to up to the time of death. So Narada Muni said, go home, little boy. And Dhruva Maharaj said, you know, those are good instructions, but guess what, Gurudev? I can't follow them. So Narada Muni, just like described here in the verse, Narada Muni didn't get angry with him. Like sometimes gurus will get angry with disciples and say, I'm your guru! Don't you understand? If you don't follow my instructions, it's a maha aparada. So, you know, we've seen that happen sometimes. I mean, Prabhupada didn't do that. Prabhupada was sometimes heavy. He didn't, like it's described here, Prabhupada was, he manifested, let's say, anger towards someone, but he wasn't angry himself. He was actually very calm and directing the heaviness towards a disciple who he knew could take it, like with Tamal Krishna Maharaj. When Tamal Krishna Maharaj was in charge of Radha Damodar, and they were stealing devotees all over the place, and the temple presidents in North America complained. Of course, we wouldn't have had any trouble here. We wouldn't have stolen any of the women. So, just the brahmacharis. So, Tamal Krishna Maharaj said to Prabhupada, you know, what do they want me to do? Go to China? And then a few moments later, or a few hours later, Prabhupada called for Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and he said, you had a good idea there. You should go to China. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, I was just, you know, joking a little bit. You know, what do they want me to do? Go to China, go to Timbuktu, go to wherever. No, Prabhupada said, Krishna spoke through you. He spoke through your mouth. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, you know, in the beginning he was reluctant. And Prabhupada said, well, you have a choice. You just stay here and I'm taking all your service away from here. You just stay here in Mayapur and chant, or you go to China. So Prabhupada was very heavy with him. But Prabhupada wasn't controlled by anger. You know, like when we talk about, because a devotee should be free from anger, but that means free from the control of anger. You could sometimes manifest something that appears to be like anger, but it's not really that you're controlled by it. You're using it in Krishna's service. There's a difference. So the guru is not supposed to be angry with the disciple who can't follow. The guru has to remain always compassionate. That's why it says, Janme, Janme, Prabhupada say, the guru has to be ready to come back, you know, life after life, to save the disciple who doesn't make it in Krishna consciousness. Of course, Prabhupada said we shouldn't make the guru come back for our benefit. But still, that has to be the attitude. It's not that the guru rejects the disciple. I mean, sometimes I've seen with parents, they may even reject the children sometimes. I had one friend, his daughter got married to someone who he didn't want her to get married to. And then I went over to his house and I said, you know, how's your daughter doing? He said, I don't have a daughter. I said, he had removed all the pictures, you know, and everything from the wall of her. And I guess I photoshopped her out of all the family pictures. You know, Photoshop, you know, means like, anyway, there's ways to do it, to take people out of the picture. Just like they did that. With one picture, there were some ladies in the Ratha Yatra, and the chauvinistic men wanted to make sure that there were no ladies in front of Prabhupada, so they actually photoshopped them out. So, that happens sometimes. So a guru will never reject a disciple, unless the disciple becomes extremely offensive. and offends the guru and offends the devotees. I mean, that's one exception. Like, I remember there was this one devotee, his name was Jama Dagmi, if you may remember it, in Los Angeles. And he came to Prabhupada, and he was extremely critical, you know, offensive. And he asked Prabhupada, you know, what is my duty? And Prabhupada said, your duty is to go out and enjoy the material world. And he said, what about my service? And Prabhupada said, you have no service. That's pretty frightening, isn't it? I mean, that's a famous story. So that's the only instance I remember of Prabhupada actually rejecting them, because he was so offensive and impeding the spiritual progress of other people. So Prabhupada did that. Otherwise, Prabhupada was very lenient and always accepting. And so Narada Muni and Dhruva Maharaj, getting back to the story, that Dhruva Maharaj said, I can't follow your instruction. And Narada Muni said, after a while, he said, well, I really admire the determination of these kshatriyas, which is a fruit of determination, because the determination of the kshatriya is in the mode of passion. You know, certainly to have a kingdom greater than that of Lord Brahma is a really passionate desire. So then, he gave him instructions in tune with his fruit of desire, which is interesting. He said, all right, you know, if you go chant Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, and then you'll achieve the fruits of your desires. And then he instructed him to engage in certain austerities, which are also done for fruit of means. Austerities like giving up eating, or eating once a month, or breathing once a month, or eating just leaves. And eventually, and giving up drinking too, but to speak of eating. And then eventually Lord Vishnu appeared before him. But because he had engaged his fruit of mentality in Krishna consciousness, then ultimately he gave up those fruit of desire. So that's the guru. He knows how to do that, how to engage someone. And Bhagavatam also corroborates this particular understanding. It says, Akama sarvakama mokshakama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. It says whether one is full of material, akama, free of material desires, full of material desires, you know, that means sarvakama, that means all material desires, or moksha kama, desires of liberation, then he should worship Krishna. So that's really how we should be preaching Krishna consciousness. That, you know, just see where someone's at. Like Prabhupada would say, whatever you're doing, do it for Krishna. I mean, ultimately, obviously, there's the Sarva Dharma Parichaya Mame Kam Shananam Braja point, which is, you know, just surrender everything, give up all varieties of religiosity, give up all your desires, just do what I say. And Krishna certainly imposed that on Arjuna, because Arjuna was ready for it. I mean, Arjuna was arguing with Krishna, but Krishna didn't give in to it. Krishna didn't say, all right, you know, I understand. Krishna is an expert judge of time, place, and circumstance. One of his qualities. Krishna didn't say to Arjuna, like I may say to a disciple, I understand, you know, you can't fight, you know, you're having these flashes of emotions where you're perceiving that it would be traumatic to kill your guru, traumatic to kill your cousin brothers, and it's all right, you know. I'll find someone else to do it. So Krishna and the expert guru know when someone has surrendered enough to get the sauce. That's another point. It's not that they'll always just say, give in to a disciple's, let's say, material attachments, like Arjuna's supposed material attachments. It was yoga maya. So, you know, so Krishna didn't just placate him. Arjuna, I see that you're... Are you feeling morose and an anxiety because you have a need to connect to your family members? No, he didn't say that. He said, you know, give up this nonsense. While speaking learned words, you're acting like a fool. You know, like an uncultured person, he said to Arjuna, and chastised him. So there was chastisement there. So the point is, there has to be some discrimination when approaching people. Krishna certainly has discrimination. Prabhupada had discrimination. It's described he only really chastised those devotees who he understood could take it. Because if you chastise someone, what is that upadesho hi morkanam prakopayana shantaya? If you give good instructions to someone who is not ready to hear them, or murka, anyway, someone who is foolish, then it'll make him disturbed. Upadesho means instructions. To someone who's a little foolish, nishantaya, he will not become peaceful, he will become disturbed, and then you won't accomplish anything. Anyway, so this is a very important point, to have the discrimination. And in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna shows how one can, let's say, approach people in different ways to encourage them in Krishna consciousness. I mean, the beginning of the 12th chapter, it's very interesting how Krishna is so merciful in this 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. The 12th chapter is actually one of the most important chapters. And the middle six chapters are actually the most important. So, I'd like to read that. Of course, first he just smashes the impersonalists. which is one of Krishna's fun things to do. He says advancement or attachment to the impersonal of yakta shakta, it's very difficult. So anyway, then he gives basically instructions for everybody. He gives a sort of like a whole hierarchy of instructions, starting at the top and going down to the bottom. He said, first of all, fix your mind upon me and engage your intelligence in me. And then he says, well, if you can't do that, Arjuna, and actually Arjuna can do it, but he's giving these instructions for us. If you can't do that, then practice bhakti yoga. And then you'll develop a desire to do that. And if you can't practice bhakti yoga, just do a little work for me. So, these are actually preaching instructions for us, how to approach people. And if you can't work for me, then try to give up the results. In other words, be unattached to the results of your work and just be peaceful. And if you can't do that, then cultivate some knowledge. Try to be a little jnani. But better than knowledge, he says, you should try meditation. And better than meditation, so he's giving all sorts of options to people here. Better than meditation is renunciation of the fruits of action. So then you can become peaceful. So anyway, so this is so interesting to read this. How Krishna is teaching us how to preach and interact with people. Okay, so I guess that's all we have time for. So this is what the verse is talking about. The fine line of not preaching nonsense, but at the same time not imposing on people a higher standard of either devotional service or austerity than that which they can accept at a particular time. Very important. Okay, Shri Radhagalokananda, Radhagalokananda ki jai.